Good afternoon. As the first Columbia Workshop broadcast at this new Sunday hour, CBS brings you Portrait of Jenny by the American novelist Robert Nathan. It is adapted by George D. Griffin of the University of Wichita. The Columbia Workshop production of Portrait of Jenny.
November 15th, 1942. My dear Judy, your letter arrived this morning, and I'm glad to know that you like the locket I sent you. The locket originally belonged to a little girl who sat for me several years ago. And since you ask about her, I think I shall write you something of her story. It is a bit unusual in some ways, because she was not an ordinary little girl. You will see. It all began when I was poor, my work unknown. One evening in the winter of 1938, I was walking home through the park. I carried a portfolio of drawings under my arm, and I walked slowly because I was tired. I was without money or friends, cold, without hope, not knowing where to turn. The park was quiet and empty, except for a single little girl who was busily occupied playing hopscotch in the middle of the mall. I stopped to watch her for a moment. Suddenly it dawned on me that it was rather late for someone our age to be playing in the park. The lights were already on. I looked around for a nurse, but the benches were empty. It's getting pretty dark. Oughtn't you to go home?
Oh, is it late? I don't know time very well. Anyway, I don't have to go home yet. Nobody's ready for me.
Are you all alone? Isn't anybody with you?
No. Who would there be? Anyway, you're with me.
And for some reason, that seemed to her quite enough. In a minute, she wanted to know what I had in the portfolio. When I told her, she nodded her head in a satisfied way.
I knew they were pictures.
How did you know?
Oh, I just knew.
She must have known what I was thinking, for as we passed the fifth bench, she told me her name without my asking.
It's Jenny, just so as you'll know.
Jenny? Jenny what?
Jenny Appleton. I go to school, but only in the mornings. I'm too little to go all day yet. My lessons are mostly 2 and 2 is 4 and things like that. When I'm bigger, I'm going to learn geography and history and all about the Kaiser. He's the king of Germany.
Well, he was, but that was long ago.
I think you're wrong.
And she walked a little away from me, smiling to herself about something. We had come to the great circle at the end of the mall. My path led away to the left and out the west gate.
Before you go, do you know the game I like to play best?
No, what is it?
It's a wishing game.
And what do you wish for most, Jenny?
I wish you'd wait for me to grow up. But you won't, I guess.
No, I'm afraid I won't, Jenny. I'll keep right on growing, too.
I was afraid of that. And it's such fun having somebody to play with. Do you have anyone to play with?
No, I don't, Jenny. But I should think that you'd have fun with lots of little boys and girls. Then you have a father and a mother, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I have. But they're not home very much on account of being in the profession. They do juggling on a rope down at the Hammerstein Music Hall. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye, Jenny. But something had begun to worry me. Wait a minute. There's something wrong here. And then I remembered. Of course. That was it. The Hammerstein Music Hall had been torn down years ago, when I was a little boy. It was late in the afternoon of the fourth day after my first meeting with Jenny. Trying to sell my drawings, I found myself in the Matthews Art Gallery on one of the side streets off 6th Avenue. Mr. Matthews smiled at me uncertainly.
We buy very little, almost nothing. The times being what they are. My assistant, Miss Spinney, usually handles all our purchasing arrangements. She isn't here just now. However, let me see what you have.
Even to be allowed to show my work to Mr. Matthews was something. Those are some studies from down on Cape Cod. That one is the fisheries at North Truro. That's the church at Mashpee.
Landscapes.
Here are one or two sketches of the city. There's the bridge.
What bridge?
The new one.
I was afraid of it.
And here's a view from the park, looking south.
Yeah, that's better.
All of a sudden, his eyes lighted up, and he reached out for the portfolio.
Here, what's that?
I looked myself with curiosity at the drawing he had in his hand. Oh, that's not anything. That's only a sketch. It's just a little girl I met in the park.
Ah, but this is different. Oh, it's good. It's very good. Do you know why I like it? I can see the past in it. Yes, sir, I've seen that little girl before somewhere. And yet I couldn't tell you where. Yeah? Yes, there's something about the child that reminds me of something. I'll buy it.
If Mr. Matthews paid me what it was worth, I should hardly have had enough for one decent meal. I'm sure now, as I look back on it, that he was thinking so, too.
Now, young man, what is your name?
Adams, sir, Eben Adams.
Well, Mr. Adams, I tell you what I'll do. I'll take the girl in that park scene and give you $25 for the pair.
My hands were trembling in good earnest now. $25, that was a lot of money to me then. But I didn't want to seem too eager.
Here you are.
All right. It's a deal.
$25.
Thank you, sir. I don't know how to tell you.
Oh, don't thank me. Who knows? In the end, I may have to thank you. The trouble is, nobody paints our times. Nobody paints the age we live in. We'll never find out what the age is like by peering in a landscape. The whole world is full of landscapes, Mr. Adams. They come in every day by the dozen. Do me a portrait of the little girl in the park, and I'll buy it. Do me a great portrait, and I'll make you famous, Mr. Adams.
And clapping me timidly on the shoulder, he ushered me out into the cold winter air. So that night, I had supper at Moore's Alhambra on Amsterdam Avenue. For all my glory, that was the best I could do for myself. As I came in, Gus Meyer, who owned the taxicab that stood at the corner of our street, waved to me from a table.
Hi, Mac. Park yourself.
He called everyone Mac. I sat down beside him. Hello, Gus. How's the cab business?
Could be worse. Could be better. How's the starving artist making out?
I'm doing all right tonight. I just owe two pictures to an art gallery.
You mean you got money? Well, you certainly had it coming to you. But don't lose it now. Put it in a bank like you read about in the advertisements.
Well, someday I want to try that, Gus, but this has to go to my landlady.
Yeah, an artist don't make much. It's the same as me. You don't get a chance to lay nothing aside.
You gentlemen find everything satisfactory?
Hello, Mr. Moore. Yes, everything is fine, thank you.
Well, we have a nice little place here, and we try to have everybody satisfied. But we don't fill half our tables. It's a lunch business, mostly.
You ought to brighten up the place a little. You take my cab. I give the old bus a going over once a week. Make it shine. That attracts the customers. They like things to look good.
Sure, only I can't afford it.
Mac, here's an artist. Why don't you get him to paint you something?
Well, that's an idea. Of course, I couldn't pay much.
All right, but you can feed him, can't you?
Yes, I can feed him.
Well, even, there's your meal ticket.
Good idea as far as I'm concerned.
Maybe you could paint me a little something over the bar. Something tasty. Like you'd enjoy standing and looking at.
I understand.
All right. Go ahead, then.
It was not a very business-like arrangement, but we shook hands on it.
Well, Mac, you're in the money now.
I went home thinking what a good world it was. That night, I gave Mrs. Jeeks the money for 3 weeks' rent.
What's the matter? You been robbing a bank?
No, Mrs. Jeeks. I'm doing some murals. It was on a Sunday morning that I saw Jenny again. There had been 2 or 3 weeks of clear, cold weather. The big lake in the park at 72nd Street was frozen, good for skating. I found Jenny near the bridge between the two ponds. She was doing a figure eight, none too well. But she seemed taller to me than I had remembered her. Older, too. We started off together, arm in arm. How's school, young lady?
Oh, it's all right. I'm having French.
French? Last time I talked with you, you were just doing your sums.
Yes, I guess I was. Now I can do them in French. And I can say colors, too.
was disconcerting to have her grow so rapidly, almost so fast that you could see her. And I was glad that I wasn't the only one who noticed the sudden growth. I made some sketches of Jenny in her skating costume. And a day or two later, I took them over to Mr. Matthews and Miss Finney.
Well, this girl looks older to me than the first one. But I rather like it better on the whole. She was perhaps a little young before. Yes, they aren't bad, are they, Spinny?
That's all you can say, that they aren't bad.
The thing I like about them is the way you've managed to catch that look of not belonging. How was it you said, not altogether belonging to today? There ought to be something timeless about a woman. Not about a man, though. We've always been more present-minded.
You can have the present, and you know what you can do with it.
I don't know what the matter is with women today. In my opinion, they lack some quality which they used to have. Some quality of timelessness which made them seem to belong to all ages at once. Something eternal. You can see it in all the great paintings from Leonardo to Sargent.
By the way, Henry, have you seen Tasker's new portrait of Mrs. Potterly?
Yes. I understand he received $3,000 for it.
$3,000?
Now, Adams, control yourself. You'll be getting that, too, someday.
All right, in that case, what do I get for my sketches now?
Spinny, you talk too much.
They gave me $50. Doesn't seem important now, but it did then. As I went over to Fifth Avenue, I thought to myself, I didn't even know where Jenny lived or how to find her. And the light went out of everything. One morning I could no longer stand the suspense of not knowing where Jenny was. And I sought out Gus at his cab stand on the corner.
So what you want is that I should find a girl whose name is Jenny. You don't know where she lives, nor nothing about her. You've got what I'd call a good start.
Her parents are jugglers, Gus, on a tightrope.
Well, that makes it easier. Are they on the vaudeville circuit?
I don't know. Their name is Appleton.
Appleton? Appleton. Say, there used to be an act by that name down at the old Hammerstein.
That's it. That's where they were.
Well, in that, they'd be in the old folks' home by now. This must be some other people. You sure you've seen this girl?
Yes. I made some sketches of her.
That don't signify. I was thinking maybe you made her up.
No, Gus. I didn't make her up.
Well, I'll take a look around if you want and ask some people I know. See you tonight at the Alhambra.
Gus wasn't at the restaurant when I got there, so I ate by myself. Then I put up my stepladder and went to work. He came in after I'd been working about an hour and sat down at a table where he could watch me. I looked down at him anxiously.
No luck, Mac. I'm sorry.
Didn't you find out anything at all?
Only that there were some Appletons did a tight wire act, like I thought, back in 1914. They had a sort of accident. It seems the wire broke on them one day. Back in 1922.
We stared at each other for a moment. Then I climbed down from the ladder, put my things away for the night, and started for home. As I went into the hall, Mrs. Cheeks came out of her parlor.
Well, there you are. You have a visitor, a young lady. Fine doings, I must say. She's waiting for you upstairs, and I wash my hands of all of it.
My heart beat fast. I knew it even before I opened my door. Some inner sense told me it was Jenny. I felt almost weak with happiness.
I thought maybe you wanted me to come, Eben.
She looked pale, I thought. And it was then that I noticed she was dressed all in black, as if in some kind of mourning. She looked at me in a pitiable way.
It's Father and Mother. They had an accident. They're dead.
I know. I read about it in the paper.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Jenny.
They were so good to me. Especially when I didn't used to see them very much. But way they died.
I know.
Oh, Ethan, no.
I wanted to comfort her, but I thought it would be better if I let her cry herself out. Turning my back, I walked over to the window, stared at the sky. After a while, I could hear her sit up and blow her nose. Look, Jenny. You don't want to pose, do you? I mean, after this.
I wanted to come. I wanted to see you, even. Just to be here. I might as well pose. I don't look pretty, though.
I thought that if anything, she looked prettier.
You're all I have now, except for my aunt. Only I don't know her very well. She's going to take care of me from now on.
Well, that's all right then, isn't it?
You want me to come, don't you? To pose, I mean.
I couldn't speak. But you must have seen in my face the answer to her doubts. She smiled.
I'll come as often as I can.
Jenny.
Yes, Ethan?
Jenny, where does your aunt live?
What does it matter where I live? You can't come to me. I can only come to you.
For a moment, we looked at each other across a gulf of more than air. After a while, she got up and put on her hat and coat.
Goodbye, Ethan. I'll come back as soon as I can. I'll hurry, truly.
She looked up at me with eyes wide and dark and earnest.
I didn't want you to know. Try to wait for me.
When Jenny returned a fortnight later, she bounded into the room.
Oh, Ethan, what fun!
For a moment, I was thoroughly taken aback. There was nothing to remind me of the last time I had seen her. In fact, there was nothing of the child about her at all. She seemed to stand almost within the shadow of vigorous young womanhood. I knew I must finish my portrait quickly before it was too late. You've grown, Jenny. Those clothes.
I know, aren't they awful? They make us wear them at St. Mary's Convent, where I've been.
It's a very different sitting from the one before. And harder, too. She was restless and in high spirits.
Eben, the girls keep asking me about you, but I won't tell them anything. Except that you're very handsome.
Jenny, don't be silly.
And that you're a great artist and that you nearly starved to death. Oh, they loved that part of it. They thought it was very romantic.
Great heavens.
Well, they did. And they think it's romantic my coming to see you like this, too.
Eben.
Hmm?
Didn't really say you were handsome. I have a funny mind, I guess. You have a funny mind, too.
Perhaps I have. Perhaps I have. Now, just turn your head a little more to the right. There. I think I've got it. I went down the hall to wash my hands. When I got back, Jenny was gone. She had left a note for me on the bed. Said, Eben, dear, I'll be back again someday, but not soon. In the spring, I think. Jenny. By May, I had no money left at all, so I took the portrait down to Mr. Matthews and Miss Finney. Gus went along with me to see that I wasn't cheated. They didn't say anything for a while. Finally, Spinney took a deep breath.
Well, Adams, that's it, all right.
Yes, that's it. That's what I meant. Well, you've given me a great surprise. I'm powerfully moved. This picture... Well, I don't like to use the word masterpiece, but just the same...
Get on with it, Henry.
Well, the point is, I don't want to buy it, but not for the reason you think. The reason is that I honestly don't know what it's worth. If the museum were to take it...
Yes?
It might bring you more than $1,000.
Gee, Mac, you've hit the jackpot.
Now, what I want to do, what we should do, is to take it on consignment, then do the very best we can for it. And as an advance, I can let you have $200.
Henry?
Well... 300.
For Pete's sake, take it, Mac.
I moved out of Mrs. Jeek's house after that and decided to join an old acquaintance, Arnie Taylor, down on the Cape. Late in September, a hurricane was reported in the Caribbean. But Tuesday's report was that it had turned east and would lose itself at sea. So we figured we had a few days' good sailing weather left and started on a trip up the coast. We camped that night on an island and built a fire at the sand's edge. That night, for the first time in my life, I dreamed of Jenny. I woke with a sense of alarm, with a feeling that something was wrong. The wind was still blowing, warm and steadily southwest, but I felt a little stronger. The clouds seemed to be traveling fast. I leaned over and shook Arnie. Get up, Arnie. We've got to get home.
Mm? What's the matter?
There's a storm coming. We put the sail up and headed north for Truro. I had to put my weight on the tiller to hold her steady.
You think the sail will hold? Well, unless the full storm catches us.
She's yawing a good deal.
We gotta watch out for the mainsail. She's apt to go any minute. I gotta watch for the river mouth. Can't have much further to go.
Arnie, there it is. There's the river.
Where?
About 100 yards to the left.
Well, we finally hit the channel. And the breakers threw us out on the sand 100 yards from where the bay should have been. We got the anchor out, but I knew it wouldn't hold. There wasn't much we could do. We climbed up to the road and turned back to watch the tide. We were pretty high above the water. And I didn't think even the ocean would reach that far. At any rate, we didn't have long to wait. In about 10 minutes, we saw the wave coming down the valley toward us from the sea. A moment later, I saw Jenny. She was below me near the town landing, trying to get up the slope from the river. Another wave was coming down the valley from the east. I don't know how I got down the hill to her against the wind and water, but I did. She lay back against me, white and spent.
I was afraid I wouldn't get here, darling.
Oh, Jenny. Here, put your arm around my neck.
I had to get back to you, Ethan.
We've got to hurry, Jenny.
You go on, Ethan. I don't seem to have much strength left. I can't make any further. I've come so far.
Oh, darling, here, let me take you up in my arms.
No, Ethan. We'll never make it.
Jenny, for God's sake.
Let me look at you. Oh, it's been such a long time,
darling. Look, Jenny, if I could lift you. Jenny, please.
Hold me close, Ethan. We're together now.
And then I saw it coming. It came from the bay, a great brown wave sweeping back up the valley toward the sea. There was no escape from it. We could never have climbed above it. Bending over, I kissed her full on the lips. Yes, Jenny. We're together now.
Ethan, don't look at it. Look at me. There's only one love, darling, whatever happens. Because we'll always be together. Somewhere.
Jenny! Jenny! I felt her whirled out of my arms. Then something crashed into me. That was all I knew. I came back to the city on a bright autumn day. Mr. Matthews was waiting for me.
We were worried about you, even. Miss Spinney and I. We couldn't get any news for a long while. I'm glad to see you again.
Miss Spinney didn't say anything. She looked to me as though she had been crying. It was Gus who gave me the little clipping from the newspaper.
I thought maybe you hadn't seen it, Mac.
It was from the Times of September 22nd. It read, "The steamship Lithania reported by wireless today the loss of one of its passengers in the storm. 100 miles off the Nantucket lightship, Miss Jenny Appleton, who was returning to America after a stay of 8 years abroad, was swept overboard by a wave which smashed a part of the bridge and injured several of the passengers. Officials of the line are endeavoring to discover the whereabouts of Miss Appleton's relatives in this country."
You've just heard the Columbia Workshop production of Portrait of Jenny, an adaptation for radio by George D. Griffin of the book of the same name by the distinguished American novelist Robert Nathan. Santos Ortega played Eben. Betty Filson, Mary Frances Heflin, and Ruth York were heard as Jenny. Others in the cast included Ed Jerome, Mildred Natwick, Eddie Nugent, William Hansen, Charmé Allen, and Chester Stratton. The special musical score was written and conducted by Lehman Engel. Earl McGill directed. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.